a little bit obstinate. And then they go through, and at the end, they're just like cinnamon rolls. I still want a little bit of that other thing.
One of my favorite grumpy characters is Roy Kent, because he says exactly what sometimes you're thinking. You get, vicariously, I would love to be able to say that to the reporter. Yes. You don't want to lose that totally. You still want them to retain a little of that.
You want them to be a cinnamon roll, but you want them to have a little crusty edge too.
Welcome to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast. I'm Sarah Rosette.
And I'm Jamie Albright. And this week on the show, we are talking about
our favorite tropes. Yep. And we've surveyed a bunch of writers and asked them what their favorite tropes are. It's going to be a trope-tastic episode.
Did you just come up with that?
So we're going to do tropes today. I think this episode may be called My Favorite Trope or something like that.
Yeah, I love that.
We're going to do that in a little bit. We're recording early. This is going to go out the week after Thanksgiving in the U.S. It's going to be a crazy time. So we're going to
record. First week in December, right?
I think it'll actually go out on November 29th.
Oh,
so almost. Sorry. Almost.
Okay. All right. Very
so
good.
So we don't really have any news because this is recording for future.
Yes. Yes.
So future airing.
Let's just talk about Book Funnel real quick.
Yes, because Book Funnel is our sponsor. They're our sponsor this month, and they have such amazing stuff. We were trying to decide what we want to talk about because they have so many features. But the main thing that we think impacts most people is the delivery of the books. It makes it so easy. And then also their group promos.
Group promos are so great. They have promos for sales. They have promos for newsletter building. They have them for all the genres, all the subgenres, not all, but they have a lot of genres, a lot of subgenres. It's so easy to get involved in one. It's also, I like how they have it structured, and it makes it really, really simple.
You just have to have a book to give away, and then you can choose if you want to be notified about promos or if you want to set up your own promo. And it's, I've done a couple of them that are invite only, where I just invite a small group of people and we just all work together. But then you can also do one where you just open it up and Book Funnel emails people who have signed up to be notified about promos, and you can just search and go, oh, I want to be involved in this Christmas promo or this Valentine's thing. And then they do keep track of, you have a reputation score. So they keep, so Book Funnel keeps track of, so you can look and see if anybody wants to be in your promo that you're setting up, you can look and see if they've not been any before or if they've been a ton or whatever. So you cannot, you know who you're working with.
That's what I love. I love that. And I was at a conference, a little small conference on Saturday here in Houston, and Damon spoke. And as he's talking about Book Funnel, first of all, he's the worst salesperson in the world. He doesn't sell Book Funnel, but they don't really have to because it really sells itself. But he was talking about their features and the things that they do. And it's really just amazing how, what a diverse platform it is and how much you can do on it. And we're just so grateful they're our sponsor.
We are. Yeah. And so if you haven't signed up for Book Funnel, if you don't know anything about it, you can go, we have a link that is a link that will get you 50% off the yearly fee for new accounts, excluding the first time author plan. And it is bookfunnel.com/WIKT-podcast. And we'll have that link in the show notes.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. So we should, well, first of all, y'all, in our never ending drive to be as professional as possible, my grandson is here. So I think you just heard him a minute ago. Hopefully they can edit, Alexa can edit that out, but I don't know if she can. So sorry, bear with us. He's on hiatus from daycare for a week or so. A little while. And so he's here.
You're wearing hats of author, podcaster, and Coco. So you got three hats on right now.
Author, podcast, Coco, and I may or may not have any underwear on. I don't know. I can't remember if I put that on this one. So there you go.
Thank goodness this is audio only.
It's audio only. We don't care. So we're going to... Oh, Lord. Again, always professional. We're going to talk about tropes today, and I just wanted to read... the like I Googled trope meaning in books. So this is what Google says. It says, in short, a trope is a plot structure, theme, storyline, character trait, motif, or plot device that is commonly used in storytelling. Whether you mean to or not, you use tropes in your writing. We all do. And that's why it's so important to study them.
Perfect. So I think that, so that's a great definition because.
Yeah, I thought it was too.
Because I think a lot of people look, or some, there's a negative connotation to the word trope sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
That's not good. But I think that's changing because now I think in the author community, especially, we love tropes and we realize why they're very powerful.
Right.
And I think if you understand that a trope doesn't mean you're just copycatting something,
right,
that you're like taking an idea or a concept and putting it into your story in a creative way, then they're very powerful and they can take your writing up a level or something.
And as an author, it really helps to have to know what the trope is you're writing to, because it really does give you boundaries and parameters. And within those boundaries and parameters, you can do whatever you want. But a trope, a certain trope is a certain trope. And you can mix tropes. Like my first book has, it was a plethora of tropes.
Threw them all in there.
Yeah, they just were all, I thought it was the only book I was ever going to write. So I just put them all in and didn't know they were tropes. I just knew those were the kind of books I liked. And, but I think too, tropes help the reader, one, identify the kind of books they want to read. If you write genre fiction, leaning into tropes is always, in my opinion, good. But I think it helps the reader identify what they want to read. But then it also gives this reader this experience of, I don't know, we're on this journey together. Like you've involved them in this, in the story, because you're writing to people who love these kinds of tropes. That's why it's important, though, to get it right when you're doing it. I'm going to talk about that a little bit. But we were going to tell us your favorite tropes.
Okay. Sarah. So we're going to give our favorite tropes and then we'll go into the answers we got from the author community. So
yeah,
I think my favorite one, of course, may depend on the day of the week, but I think overall,
well, I know, me too. Yeah,
it's hard to pick one, but I picked found family because I love that, especially in an ensemble cast. And there's, and I think part of that is because like in an ensemble cast, it's harder to define that ensemble cast type story book anyway. So I think when I can find that and found family together, I'm so happy. I get so excited. I'm like, oh, I'm so ready to watch this or read this or whatever it is. And I just love the seeing somebody go from not having any connections and being alone and a little broken. And then you get them into this family and you form these connections and network. And then at the end, they're whole and they're happier. I just, I think that's part of it, is a very, it's usually a very positive arc. Positive. So I love that.
I do too. And honestly, it's one of my favorites too. I have to agree with you. I love that. But I especially love it when you combine it with my two favorites. And I could not pick between these two because they're very similar. Opposites attract and enemies to lovers. And when you have those two, and then you also have found family, that's just my catnip right there. And I love Opposites Attract and Enemies to Lovers because you can usually get some really great banter. I just love the banter that comes between two people who either don't understand each other or and see the world from two different perspectives or who just butt heads at every turn. I think the danger with both of those, especially Enemies to Lovers, is making the heroine come off unlikable.
Unsympathetic.
Unsympathetic. Yeah. I think as misogynistic as it is, I think we have to understand that readers will cut heroes a lot of slack and they will cut heroines less slack. And so we have to really just be careful when you're doing it. Not that they can't be themselves, but there should always be this element of they're enemies to lovers, but they're also attracted to each other. Mm-hmm. We don't, especially in a romance, we don't have a romance. It's hard to go from I hate you so much mm-hmm. to I love you if there's not this underlying current mm-hmm. of there is something about them that they like, admire, right. like that.
And as a reader or a watcher, you're like, oh, these two people are perfect for each other mm-hmm. if they could just figure it out.
And you have to let the reader know that, show the reader that. You don't tell them, mm-hmm. but you show them. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's important, too, that those qualities that they see in that other person that they might like or admire, that just makes them more angry or creates more conflict. Yeah. It creates more tension. You can use it that way.
Do you want to give your favorite examples?
Sure.
Of your favorite enemies to lovers.
Enemies to lovers and then opposites attract. Mm-hmm. I think the very first rom-com I ever read was Nobody's Baby But Mine by Susan Elizabeth Phillips. That's one of, and it's an opposites attract and then turns into an enemies to lovers, then turns into a found family. It's awesome. And then another opposite attract is a show is Moon. Was it Moon? Not Moonstrike. Moonlighting with Bruce Willis. Yeah. That was one of my favorite shows back in the day. I just mm-hmm. loved it. And of course, when they got together, I was done. But it was so great. And then enemies to lovers, or not necessarily enemies to lovers, really more opposites attract too, is Natural Born Charmer by Susan Elizabeth Phillips. That's probably my favorite book ever. And then there's an enemies to lovers is Lisa Kleypas, It Happened One Autumn. And that's part of the Wallflower series. Man, I'm having trouble. The Wallflower series. And then, of course, there's Castle.
Yes.
Same dynamic. Mm-hmm. I love that. And I think that's it. That's probably enough for me. What about you?
So like for found family ensemble cast, the first one I thought of for a book was A Thursday Murder Club by Richard mm-hmm. Osman, because it's got the four people in their retirement home who come together and usually this trope is each character is very different and you mm-hmm. need each character mm-hmm. to complete the whole, make everything work. And so that's the setup for that one. For TV, of course, Ted Lasso, found family, coming together. Like they need each other and they're all supportive of each other by the end of the show.
Yep.
There's a British TV show called New Tricks that I think it's on Acorn or BritBox. I can't remember which one, but it's a crime scene investigation show. And it's part of this trope is the down and out person gets put in charge of this ragtag bunch of mm-hmm. people that either they don't know each other at all or they don't like each other. So there's that mm-hmm. Opposites and enemies, you know, mm-hmm. to friends mm-hmm. going on. And so that one's a good one. And it's long. It's got, I can't remember how many seasons. So that one's good. And then there's another one called The Little Murders of Agatha Christie. It's a French detective show. Mm-hmm. And then I just finished a Korean show called Good Manager or Chief Kim. And uh-huh. it's the same thing. It's an office drama. Uh-huh. And this group of people comes together and they become friends and they become a little family. But mm-hmm. the twist to it is that the guy who becomes their manager used to work for gangsters, but he's going to steal from the company because he's going big time. He has a redemption arc. And then you've got all the characters. So I don't see that as often in TV. A lot of times it's like the duo. Even the A-Team, that's an ensemble thing from
An ensemble cast from back in the day. But I forgot, I can't even believe I forgot this because I'm reading the second book now, but Fourth Wing is huge enemies to lovers trope, the first book. Woo! They hate each other. And that's
super really popular right now.
Very popular. Yeah. So we should probably get on with some of our people and some of our guests.
Okay, so we had a lot of response to this question. Send it out, and we're so happy that y'all gave us information about what you like and examples. And we hope that as we go through this, if you're writing one of these, it'll give you some examples to go look up or maybe spark some ideas for you. Yep. But so we got so many responses. I don't think we're going to be able to all do them today. So I think it'll probably be a two-part episodes. So let's start with Wendy Vella. Uh-huh. And she writes historical romance and contemporary small town romance. Mm-hmm. She writes historical romance as Wendy Vella, contemporary small town as Lanny Blake. Mm-hmm. So she said her favorite trope is grumpy sunshine, which
that's a great one.
Always fun. And so we asked, why do you love it? And she said, there's just something about seeing an annoyed, grumpy guy slowly changing because this woman, who is his exact opposite, gets under his skin. Yeah. All the nuances at work in these books with the character's journey, if well done, make for such good reading.
Yeah.
And the example she gave was a book, Lucy Scores, The Things We Never Got Over, and the movie Leap Year.
Yeah.
So that is a great example of grumpy sunshine.
And Lucy's book, there's no denying the appeal of that trope in that book. And I think that we love that so much because we do love that redemption arc. Mm-hmm. And we want to see them happy because, not because of this woman necessarily, but just because they see that life can be a little bit different and it doesn't have to be grumpy all the time.
Usually the grumpy hero is in some way. And it's like he, or sometimes it's a woman that's the grumpy person, but the grumpy person like has to heal. And once they start to heal, then they're not quite so grumpy.
Right.
Maybe they're still a little grumpy, but not.
Because that's total what we like them. I don't like it when, I hate it when you start with this character and he is someone that we like them because they're a little bit grumpy, a little bit cantankerous, a little bit obstinate. And then they go through, and at the end, they're just like cinnamon rolls. I still want a little bit of that other.
Well, one of my favorite grumpy characters is Roy Kent because he says exactly what sometimes you're thinking. You get, vicariously, I would love to be able to say that to the reporter. Yes. You don't want to lose that totally. You still want them to retain a little of that.
You want them to be a cinnamon roll, but you want them to have a little crusty edge too.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
not too mushy.
No, not too mushy. So Inez Johnson is the next person. And of course, I get Inez's, and she wrote a lot. So that's great. She writes, her pen name, Shanae Johnson, has three series featuring the marriage of convenience trope. And so she writes, so we can talk about what books of hers are the marriage of convenience trope, but she loves that. She says, I'm a problem solver at heart, and at any type of forced proximity trope, marriage of convenience, fake dating, snowed in on a road trip. Love that. Even if it's on a spaceship because she was abducted. I love that. Is a situational problem where they can't escape one another and they have to work out a solution. Her favorite part of the marriage of convenience story is usually the vows at the end, because she always likes to write their vows. And I love, then after the vows, these two dummies always seem to forget that a kiss is part of the deal. So if they get married or marriage of convenience or whatever, they forget that they have to kiss. And I love the surprise and panic right before the kiss. Then they touch lips and they feel something. It gets me every time as a reader, and I giggle and cackle my way through it as I write it. And so I love that. And what I love is the proposal, that when that moment when they have to kiss and they're like, everybody's kiss her. And so they kiss it like a little peck. And then they're like, no, a real kiss. And then they kiss, and you can just see how things change between them, because that is a enemies to lovers for sure. But then it turns into a engagement of convenience or marriage. Hopefully they're moving towards a marriage of convenience. And then her Shanae Johnson pen name has three series featuring marriage of convenience: The Brides of Purple Heart Ranch, The Rangers of Purple Heart Ranch, and The Silver Star Ranch Romances. Clearly she loves the trope. And actually they're cowboys, but they were soldiers too.
So she's hitting so many tropes in her. And that's the great thing about tropes, is like you can layer them and it just makes it so much more interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think she said her favorite marriage of convenience movie is The Magic of Ordinary Days, when a student gets knocked up by a professor and then signs up as a mail order bride to temporarily hide her condition, but she winds up falling for a simple farmer. So I don't think I have seen that.
Wow, I have not seen that. The Magic of Ordinary Days. We'll have to put that on our list.
Yeah, I just can tell that's going to be on your list.
That's a good one. And I think the marriage, I think she's right. That marriage of convenience or that forced proximity where they're having to be together and they can't. They have to keep up this outward facade. That just creates so much good tension. The outward facade versus the inward thing where either they're fighting their attraction or they don't want to, they have an attraction, but they don't like each other or whatever, or they're just trying to get through this period of time, which I love that too, because a lot of the times marriage of conveniences have like an end date. So that creates that creates tension and anticipation. Yeah. And I love that too.
And that's like an example of a ticking clock. And a lot of times you think that's only in a thriller, but that's an example of it in romance, which I just now realized that. So that gives you that tension. And then I feel like the reason she was talking about the kiss being so interesting is because you have that, what you're showing the world. And then you see, oh, there is something else going on here. And even if they don't admit it to themselves, like they can't hide it, it's there's a, it shows you that there's more going on there than you think. Love it.
I do too.
That's, I love that trope too. All right. So let's see. Should we go on to Becca's? We have Becca's.
Let's go on to Becca's. Yeah.
Okay. So she's, her favorite trope she listed is friends to lovers. And she says, this trope sets up the perfect dilemma, potentially losing one of the deepest relationships of your life by asking the unknown question, do they return your feelings or not? So even hinting at a deeper than friendship intention could lose you this person you love. And that's like a great dilemma. Mm-hmm. Like that's how you create the tension in that type of storyline with that trope.
And she went on a bit of a rant about this, that how she does it in her group. She does. If you tell her you're giving her a friends to lovers, they better be friends to lovers. They may, it may, it should have all the hallmarks of a friends to lovers where there's this, the, I'm sorry, y'all, if y'all can hear that. He's okay. There's all the hallmarks of a friends to lovers where there's the stakes are high. They could lose the relationship. Someone could get hurt. Other people could get hurt. They could lose a relationship with someone like the older brother or the parents who've been like parents to him if they found out because maybe he's older or something. So there's always the stakes are high. And if you don't put that in there, then to Becca, it is not a true friends to love.
It waters it down, right?
It does. I mean, it waters it down.
It makes it not as powerful as it could be. Yeah. All right. So she listed, her example is the rom-com Someone Like You with Ashley Judd and Hugh Jackman. Mm. And it says, this shows a deep, intimate friendship that could be completely ruined by the revelation of feelings. Mm. And there's this moment where Hugh Jackman is looking at Ashley Judd and she doesn't know it. They don't speak. And while he takes this long, heartbreaking draw of breath, like he just wants to be nearer and nearer to her, he struggles with whether to say something and potentially lose her, her or continue to be close to her, but not have what he really wants. Right. It's the perfect dilemma. Equal and opposite stakes. The emotional tension is so beautiful. And she says, I rewatch this movie every couple of years. And so I think that's just a great example of the heart of the trope.
The stakes have to be high. And then I think friends to lovers.
Yes.
Romance. Because in real life, they would be. You don't, we've all had those friendships that one person felt. And it, once you say what you feel, unless they reciprocate, it changes everything. And it's hard.
It's a completely different setup than we were talking about the enemies to lovers. Because if you don't like each other and you, if you go your separate ways, not a big deal. So that's sometimes why you have to have that external pressure. That's why it works so well with like marriage of convenience or whatever, because you're forced into that. This, they're in a relationship because they like each other and want to be together, like as friends. And then do you lose that? That's the question. Correct. Do you risk losing that?
Do you risk losing it for love? I love that. Was there more that Becca said?
Mm-mm. You're good.
Okay. I wanted to, because we've talked a lot about romance, and I don't want to let, I don't want our other listeners who don't read romance to feel left out. So Daniel Wilcox said that His favorite horror trope is the no technology or broken technology. And this is the trope that essentially is used in modern stories in which people are in a bit of a dodgy situation and their phone breaks or the power goes down or something happens that basically breaks communication to the outside world and makes things much more immediate and tense. Or it could be when stories are set in pre-technology, and so stories are elevated by the fact that they don't have this instant access to escape to help it in an emergency. And the reason that I love this is specifically as a horror writer, having technology in the palm of your hands and all around us is, in the modern world, a thing that obviously makes us very safe. And I think that we can all relate to that. Like us in Texas, when we had that big freeze.
The ice storm, yeah.
And we lost all technology and we couldn't get in touch with anybody. And water's coming through our ceilings. But just that feeling of being isolated. There were no monsters in my house, but... But it was still terrifying because we've gotten so used to feeling so safe because of our instant access to each other and emergency services and all of that.
I think, too, if you forget your phone, if you leave the house and go run an errand and I don't have my phone now, I'm like, oh, my gosh, I don't have my phone. Even though I'm old enough that I remember living without a cell phone. Yeah, I used to drive across the country and do all kinds of things with no cell phone. And now you think about that and go, wow, our lives are so different now. So it's just interesting if you remove a certain layer of our security and safety, the impact it has.
Yeah. And the minute you, and this is what Daniel says too, but the minute you take away that ability for us to reach each other, reach emergency services, reach the car tow people or whatever, then it opens up an opportunity to scare people. It gives up the opportunity to search for answers and rely on the primitive parts of our brain that we have forgotten. And I really love that because that is something like that's not just horror. That's like thriller. That's a lot of things. But in horror movies that I don't watch, but have been forced to either watch or I've seen parts of, that's always the thing. It's like they run to the phone, doesn't work.
Yes.
They're about to come around, look, they've gotten everybody together and then the lights go out and they turn around and half the group is gone. It can be terrifying and it can up the tension and stakes in a book or movie. And I think that's so great.
He's listed some examples for us.
Yes,
too.
He did. One of the few stories that really do this for me is On a Rainy Night by Richard Lehman, which is essentially about this kind of cursed rain that makes people go absolutely feral. Oh my gosh. That is
not our normal read for Jamie and I.
Not me either. But everyone is independent in their own homes. And we tell these stories across the different locations and people just really struggle because they can't connect to other people. They're very much intensely stuck in the situation they're in. And obviously that creates very much of its own horror because the world shrinks around you. Mm-hmm. Another example that people will recognize is Michael Crichton's Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm. Classic.
Yep. Technology fails and lets the dinosaurs out.
Let's add dinosaurs to that.
Spoiler alert, the dinosaurs eat a lot of people. I just think that this is a great one. And then the last one is another fantastic example. He says in the last couple of years is Mike Flanagan's Midnight Mass, which was a Netflix series. And they're on an isolated island. Bad things happen. They're very much disconnected from anywhere around them. And there is no real signal or way to communicate with the outside world. And what is that Agatha Christie where they all go to the island? I can't remember the name.
And then there were none.
So I was gonna say, there were none. fairies not coming back. Yeah. And
a lot of these elements are also good. They're good for horror, but they're also mm-hmm. good for mystery too, mm-hmm. because you've got mm-hmm. the cutoff from the authorities who would come in and handle the case. So yeah. a lot of these elements, you can use the removing of the technology mm-hmm. or the safety. Mm-hmm. You need that sometimes mm-hmm. to make your stories mm-hmm. more compelling.
And a lot of people will go, oh, of course the lights go out, but it doesn't stop you from putting your hands before your face and yeah. peeking through your fingers to see what's going to happen next.
That is true.
There yeah. you go.
Maybe we should do Maddie's next, because she's yeah. mystery. So that'd be another one.
And then yeah,
that'd
be a good one.
So Maddie Dalrymple, who was just on the podcast recently, she said yeah. her favorite trope is, she says, I love an unpredictable twist.
Yeah.
And she says, as a reader, I love being surprised. And if the author has done their work correctly, delighted at a development I didn't see coming, but which was in retrospect inevitable. That's like the yeah. best.
Yeah.
As a writer, I love rewriting or rewatching these stories to see how the author set up the twist. Mm-hmm. And her favorite is The Sixth Sense, and Unbreakable is another good one. And she writes mystery, thriller, supernatural, suspense as yeah. Maddie Dalrymple.
Yeah.
So yes, that's, I think the twists are so hard to do.
They are so hard.
But if you can pull one off, and I think part of like thrillers now, it's almost required that you have this crazy twist. Yeah. And as people are getting the ideas for the twist are getting there, it's hard to come up with a new one. So like yeah. sometimes yeah. some of them are bizarre. There's some books that I've read that like there's nothing paranormal in them at all. And then all of a sudden it's just paranormal. Yeah. It's a paranormal solution or a yeah. paranormal twist. I'm like, wait a minute. So I feel like they're really hard to do in a satisfying way.
Yeah.
So I don't know yeah. that I'm good at twist. I'm good at hiding clues and things.
Yeah, yeah.
But the twist, I think, is
it's a whole nother level.
A different yeah, category.
It is. And what's funny is Nate Bargatze, he's a comedian. He talks mm-hmm. about The Sixth Sense. Mm-hmm. He's talking about men and women's relationships and how uh-huh. you'll go all day without talking to each other because you're mad or all this stuff. And he said, and in the movie Sixth Sense, it was easier for us to believe they hadn't spoken in a year than he was dead. That was probably one of the best twists of all time. It was so good.
So another one that I think of is Gone Girl, because everybody oh, yeah. talked about that. Ugh. Because it was,
yes,
you just didn't.
It was just twisted. But yes. then that was a huge twist.
Yeah. And I guess that's how you know if it's a good twist is that yeah. people talk about it. And they're like, yeah. they're so fascinated. They want to talk about it yeah. because it yeah. was so unexpected.
That movie, that book and movie. So I think that you want to do Megan? Let's do hers.
Okay. So Megan yeah. Haskell, she writes Portal Fantasy Adventures as Megan Haskell. Mm-hmm. And her favorite trope is found family. Is this yeah. why you threw this one to me? Okay. So she says, I love the idea of the outsider being able to gather together a group of people who love, understand, and support her through her trials and tribulations. We often yeah. put our characters through a lot of pain and suffering, so it's good for them to find the family they need. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't list a favorite example, but the classic, of course, is Harry Potter.
Yes.
Which that is very true.
That's true. And I think found family, we talked about it. You were talking about mysteries. I'm talking about mm-hmm. romance, but like a lot of fantasy, yeah. a lot of urban fantasy have this idea of found family, because usually they have this loner who's mm-hmm. been fighting evil by themselves. And then they, as they go along, they're collecting all these people. Mm-hmm. Then and it's not just because they rely on the heroine or hero to protect them. They become protectors of the hero or heroine.
Yes.
And
yes.
that's so great. And I love that when I'm reading, I have several urban fantasy books, that series that I love. Mm-hmm. And it's all that, mm-hmm. just these, usually it's women. They've been by themselves for a mm-hmm. long time. They're lonely. They think they'll never have a family, and they think they're yeah. better for it because mm-hmm. of danger or whatever. And then they are gathering these people yeah. and they just can't believe now they have all these people around them. But mm-hmm. I love that so much.
This makes me think of the heroine's journey. It's the opposite of the hero's journey.
Yeah,
like the hero becomes increasingly isolated as he goes uh-huh, on. Uh-huh. And the heroine's journey is she begins, or he, it doesn't have to be a woman, but that character gathers more and more people and gathers a team around them in a family. And yes. It just makes me think of that. And maybe that's why that appeals to me so much. Gail Carriger, yes, her book,
Gail Carriger.
The Heroine's Journey. So that's, I guess that's maybe like the core of why I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that journey better than the hero's journey in many ways.
Speaking of Gail Carriger, that was quite a coup when we had her on the podcast. I'm just going to say we really knocked it out of the park with that one. So.
Yeah, it was a great interview.
I think this is a good place to stop, and we'll pick up and do the rest. Maybe in December we'll do that, because it can be a little overwhelming, but I think that I think if we can give listeners this idea, especially newer listeners who you just start writing and you don't really think about, and if you're writing genre fiction, it can really help you to narrow down your audience, narrow down your what you're writing. It can give you a good blueprint for how to get from beginning to end.
Gives you some structure.
It does.
I find very helpful to know that, oh, this is the path this story is going to take. It helps me.
I think that's great. And we just want to thank Book Funnel for sponsoring us this month. We love them. We know you love them. If you're new or you haven't tried them, you need to give them a try. They're just so helpful for your author business. We really appreciate them so much.
Yes, we do. So thanks for being them. Yes. So it is bookfunnel.com/WIKT-podcast. And that with that link, you can get $50 off the yearly fee for new accounts, excluding the first-time author plan.
Yep.
And so they've been our sponsor the whole month of November. So thanks to them. And got anything else?
I just want to say, I still don't have my Facebook account. So if you're the praying type, send up some prayers. If you're the love and light type, send up some love and light, because I really, really need that account back. And because of that, I'm going to say on here that I'm still doing my consulting services. I give a discount for our listeners in December. I'm going to give a $40 discount to listeners of the podcast. So let me know if you are interested. You can reach me at jamiealbright.com/author services, or we'll have my email address in the show notes. Don't message me, because I can't get to my messages right now.
Don't message through Facebook.
It's got to come through email. But as a little Christmas thing, I'm going to give a $40 discount. So
nice. Okay. That is awesome. We'll have that link. That'll be in the show notes. And also thank you to Alexa Larberg for editing and producing the podcast. We appreciate you taking out all of our edits in this one, because we know this one will be a lot of work. And also thank you to Adriel for doing the admin for the podcast.
Yes,
so we'll see everybody next week.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.